Kurzweil wrote a book one time, and the title of the book was When Life Throws You a Curveball, ... Hit It. And I give you the title of that book to suggest to you that few, if any of us, go through life without life throwing us some level of curveballs. Marital failures, health failures, financial failures. Very few people, if any, live an entire life of 60, 70, 80, 90 years and without any hint of failure or disappointments.
It's a movement, but it's about people. Be the People is about we the people joining forces to reclaim and reshape the best of our nation's time-treasured traditions. Each week, we offer insightful interviews with movers and shakers from all different spheres of life. And now, please welcome Dr. Carol Swain.
Today, we're going to talk about success and failure with an entrepreneur who has experienced both. Often we see people at certain stages of their lives and we assume that it was always easy for them to reach the point where we see them successful. We see the end product, but we're not always privy to the backstory. Most of us have heard of Steve Jobs. He co-founded Apple at age 21. He hired a Fortune 500 CEO to run his business, and 3 years later, that same CEO fired him. Jobs was already a millionaire. What did he do? He left Apple. He founded another company, and later, Apple acquired the company that Steve Jobs founded. An older, wiser Steve Jobs became the new CEO of Apple, the company he had founded when he was 21. Jobs would later tell people that getting fired was one of the best things that ever happened to him. And so if we were to talk with numerous successful businessmen, we would find stories of success and failure, and sometimes people have had multiple failures. Our guest today is Mike Hardwick. Mike is the founder and owner of Churchill Mortgage. Churchill Mortgage is located in Nashville, Tennessee. And Mike has a success story, much like Steve Jobs. He experienced early success, followed by failure, and now he's back on top with a mortgage company that has offices in 38 states. His company does more than $1 billion a year in business. Mike is also a pastor's son, and he's the author of Keep Chopping Wood, a pastor's son who had it all, lost it all, and then regained true wealth. And so Mike is going to talk with us about his story and what he means by true wealth as opposed to false wealth. Mike, welcome to the Be the People show, which is on the America Out Loud network.
Thank you. It's very good to be with you today, Carol.
And Mike, we've known each other for a long time, and so we won't go into how long we've known each other, but
okay.
I happen to know that you've had a very interesting background, your childhood, as well as the story of your business success and how you became the man you are today. And share with our listeners just what it was like for you as a child growing up. I guess you grew up in, what, the 70s?
You're most kind. I actually was born in 1951, so I was a child of the 50s and the 60s.
Really? Okay, you look so young. Well, how would I know?
Thank you. Thank you very much. You're most kind. My growing-up years were wonderful years. My mother and father, who you knew my mother well. Mom passed away about 13 years ago. And, of course, my father is 86 and still doing well. You knew Dad and Mom quite well. They were pastors of a church. They got married at age 18 and started a church the same year they got married. And 60 years later, the church had grown to almost 8,000 members, and Dad retired from the full-time ministry there. But I grew up in a pastor's home in the 50s and 60s, and actually those were wonderful years. I've got very, very fond memories of both my home life with wonderful parents, but also growing up in America at that time. It was a wonderful time in the 50s. As you know, the 60s, things started changing a little bit, but overall I had a great growing up experience.
Well, nowadays, Mike, you know, people see pastors and pastors, they have jets and, you know, they have huge homes and Rolls Royces. Pastor Hardwick's church wasn't quite like that, was it?
Well, no, of course not. And I might hasten to add, for every pastor that any of us see flying around in a jet, there's probably 10,000 that are barely able to pay their bills, but they're pastors because it's a true calling. But no, Lord, no. My mom and dad, the first 12 or 13 years of them trying to grow a church, they both worked full-time public jobs because the church wasn't large enough to have the money to pay them. So they clearly had a calling. It was something that was true and dear to their heart.
And even, you know, in line with the show's message today about entrepreneurs, Pastor Hardwick had a vision because when he was able to grow a church from 8 members to several thousand?
Almost 8,000.
And so, I mean, I know I've heard some of the tales. I believe you and your brother Steve, you sold things from door to door.
Yeah, we're not on the show today to promote my book, but I will tell you the very first chapter, I talk about how I learned to sell. And I remember as a young lad, probably no more than 8 or 9 years old, many, many Saturday mornings, Dad would wake my brother and I up before the sun was coming up. And, you know, he would get us up, we'd brush our teeth, and we'd put on our clothes, and Dad would drive us downtown Nashville to a brand new business. It was called Krispy Kreme Donuts.
Mm.
And we would load the old Oldsmobile station wagon. Those things were like tanks back in those days, quite large. We would load that car up with as many dozen donuts as we could get in the car. And we would take them back out to the south side of Nashville, a little community called Woodbine. And we would go door to door selling those donuts. Dad would drive the car right down the middle of a street there in Woodbine. And Steve would take one side of the road, and I would take the other. And Dad taught us to walk up, knock on the door, and when somebody would come to the door on an early Saturday morning, typically in their pajamas, we were taught to say, "Hi, my name is Mike Hardwick. That's my father out in the car on the street. We're selling hot Krispy Kreme donuts this morning, trying to raise money to buy an organ or a piano or whatever we were raising money for the little church for at that time." And they always taught us to say you can buy one dozen for, I don't remember, I want to say like 65 cents, or you can buy 2 dozen for a dollar. Would you like 2 dozen? Dad taught us how to upsell, as we call it. And so through that experience, countless Saturday mornings, I learned how to meet total strangers and not be intimidated by it. I learned how to sell. I learned how to upsell. So my very first lessons as a lad, learning how to sell, and someone might say how to almost be a little bit of a budding entrepreneur, was going door to door selling donuts, trying to raise a little money so we could buy an organ or pay the light bill or whatever it was for the church. It was a wonderful experience.
Okay, Mike, we're going to take a brief break, and when we return, I'd like for you to talk about your first job and maybe when you decided that you were going to be a business person.
The goal is to deliver a message of truth, inspiration, and hope to the world, to unite people from all backgrounds and beliefs in an effort to advance humanity. News blogs, informative podcasts, and entertaining videos. It's AmericaOutloud.com, where the conversation never ends, with 24/7 streaming on our free apps on both Android and Apple. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
There are speakers, and then there are great speakers who know the importance of creating that memorable moment. Well, the key to any successful event is an informative and inspirational speaker. Professor Dr. Carol Swain is that gifted speaker. She delivers passionately from the heart every time. To find out more about booking Carol for your next great event, simply go to carolmswain.com. Click on Public Speaking and then click the blue Book Carol tab.
I'm back with Mike Hardwick. And we're talking about his life, but also about success and failure in business. And so Mike is a successful owner and founder of a mortgage company today, but there's a backstory. And I'm not sure I know the entire backstory. So, Mike, what was your first job? And when you went to college, did you know that you were going to be an entrepreneur, or did you ever think of becoming a pastor like your father?
That's a very good question. I appreciate you asking that. When I first went to college, I went to St. Louis, Missouri, to a small church college called Gateway College. And I graduated from there 3 years later with a double major in music and theology. I thought I might go into the ministry because I was reared in a pastor's home, and we were very fortunate to have parents that were loving and kind, and so I was very open to going into the ministry. But once I graduated and I came back to Nashville, I sat down with Dad, and I said, "Dad, I don't know that I have a calling. I'm prepared for it, but I don't know that I have a calling. What do you think I should do?" And Dad was always a very practical type man. He said, "Well, son, I guess you should go back to college and get another degree." And so I ended up going to Belmont University here in Nashville, a wonderful school. They accepted many of my credits from Gateway College. In 2 more years of college, I graduated with a bachelor's degree, actually a BBA with an emphasis in finance. I went to work very quickly after graduating for what was at that time the largest bank in the state of Tennessee. It was called First American National Bank. I got into banking, frankly and honestly, because I had two wonderful uncles. One was my dad's brother. The other was a brother of my mother's. They were what I might say were kind of my favorite uncles. And they were that way because they were both very, very athletic, very good athletes. I loved sports then, as I do now. And so because they were both bankers, I was open to going into banking. So that's how I got my first job and got started. And I've pretty well all through the years now, since that time, I guess over 35 years or more now, I've pretty well been in banking. I've been in one form of banking or another, either commercial banking, investment banking, or mortgage banking. I've been fortunate to be one of the founders of two brand new banks over the years as well. So that's how I got in the banking world.
And I should tell listeners that all of this is in your book, Keep Chopping Wood. And even though yes. The purpose of this interview is not just to promote the book, it does tell the backstory, and the proceeds from the book goes to charities.
That's correct.
And so, Mike, what role did mentors play in your development? Like, how did you get from working for your uncles to starting Churchill Mortgage? What was in between?
You know, Carol, your question has brought to my memory a photo I saw one time. It You know, you can go into a lot of businesses and there'll be large posters on the wall with a picture of a scene and a little caption at the bottom. This particular poster photo that I saw was a picture of a pasture. And in the pasture were some cattle and there was a fence. And right in the forefront of that poster is one of the fence posts. And sitting right on top of that fence post is a turtle. And the caption at the bottom simply says, "He didn't get up there by himself." I say that to say, whatever level of success I've been fortunate enough to have in my life, I certainly did not do it on my own. I've had many, many friends and a wonderful family, an army of tremendously talented and wonderful employees. But in my life, my early life, I was the beneficiary of two particular mentors that to this day I have to credit a lot of my early success to those two mentors. One was obviously my father. He taught me how to hopefully be a very good man, a good citizen, how to be a good husband, how to be a good father, how to be a man of honesty and integrity. And I value all those traits, and I've tried to the best of my ability to live them out through the years. The other mentor was a gentleman by the name of Dick Freeman. Dick became a tremendous business mentor to me. He taught me how to start a business and operate a business and grow a business. I never would have dreamt in my early college years that I could do that. But somehow he saw something in me that caused him to be willing to invest time in me. And I had countless dinners and lunches with Dick and his family, and he invested so much of his knowledge and his skill set into me. And that's how I really learned how to become an entrepreneur, a businessman, and be able to start things. And I've been very fortunate. I've played a major role in starting two banks. We started one back in 1989. We sold it 13 years later, reputedly for the highest multiple any bank in America has ever sold for. We've been able to start two mortgage companies. So mentors have played a very significant role in my life.
Now, we get to the part of the story where I want you to share with our listeners about some of the failures.
Well, let me start off on this by saying to you, I had another good friend. It was actually Dick Freeman's son, Criswell Freeman. Criswell wrote a book one time, and the title of the book was "When Life Throws You a Curveball, ... Hit It." And I give you the title of that book to suggest to you that few, if any, of us go through life without life throwing us some level of curveballs. Marital failures, health failures, financial failures. Very few people, if any, live an entire life of 60, 70, 80, 90 years and without any hint of failure or disappointments. I had an extraordinary level of early success in life. It was the blessings of the good Lord. That's my way of posturing it. And went through a series of years where we were making significant six-figure incomes and doing quite well. And then suddenly, a single act of legislation out of Washington, D.C.
And you didn't see it coming.
Called the tax rate. I did not see it coming. Absolutely did not see it coming. But the Tax Reform Act of 1986 was signed into law, and within a few short months thereafter, it took our business and drove it out of business. Many, many people, my good friend Dave Ramsey during that era, it affected him, drove him into bankruptcy. It wiped out the S&L industry in our country. I could teach a PhD-level course on the effects of that tax act. But suffice it to say, it took me in my mid and late 30s from a young man with having enjoyed financial success far beyond anything I'd ever dreamt I would. And all of a sudden, I became unemployed. I was deeply in debt personally, several millions of dollars in debt. And I had little to no ability to pay it.
Now, I know that
and
you
those
would...
were...
Go ahead.
Well, they were very difficult years, very difficult years.
I know that you were deeply depressed. Did you ever think of suicide?
You know, I know. I never thought of suicide, but I will tell you that during those 8 or 10 months when I did experience depression, I did understand how some people could be driven to that. Thankfully, I never considered that or had those fears or thoughts in my mind. But I did develop a level of empathy for people who have done it. You know, it's hard to judge other people till you've walked in their shoes. And, you know, those were difficult times, scary times, demoralizing times, without a doubt.
Now, Mike, we're going to take another brief break, and when I return, I'd like for you to talk about the significance of Ronald Reagan and Winston Churchill in your life.
Are you wondering what we can do about immigration? Then get your copy of my newly released book, Debating Immigration, the second edition, available at Amazon, Cambridge University Press, and all major booksellers.
I'm here with Mike Hardwick discussing aspects of his life, but also about success and failure. And in his book, Keep Chopping Wood, he talks about Ronald Reagan and Winston Churchill, how they impacted his life. So, Mike, would you share that with our listeners?
Happy to. I grew up, Carol, way before the days of smartphones and cable TV and video games. Back in the 50s and the 60s, if you were fortunate enough to have a TV in your house, those TVs, typically you had three or four local stations, and that was it. And so one of the ways that I occupied a lot of my time, I became an avid reader. I got to where I loved reading. My father was always a very avid reader, and so I guess I got that from my dad. But I love to read, and I still love to this day to read. And as a consequence of my reading, I love sports, of course, but I also love politics and I love business. Two of the political figures over the years that I've kind of developed an affinity with and I've liked reading more and more about were Ronald Reagan and Winston Churchill. And as we began to think about starting our mortgage company now almost 27 years ago, one of the decisions I had to make was, what do I name the company? And just like most entrepreneurs, I initially thought, well, what if I name it, give it my name, Hardwick Mortgage? And I pretty quickly decided that was not going to be, it wasn't going to get me any business. And then I thought, okay, my two political figures that I so admire, Reagan and Churchill, and I thought Reagan Mortgage. And I pretty quickly discarded that because I decided probably roughly half the country wouldn't want to do business with me because they were Reagan fans. And then I zeroed in on Churchill, and probably one of the best decisions I've ever made in business was choosing that name. Winston Churchill was a man of great tenacity. He was a guy that hardly was ever willing to quit. He just persevered. And he was determined to succeed. And so I chose that name because I was a Winston Churchill fan. And it's so today, here we are almost 27 years later, the name of our company, Churchill Mortgage, it stood us in very well.
And I know that Churchill Mortgage has won some awards for how it treats its employees, that the employees, it's like a family business because the employees are treated like family.
Mm-hmm. Carol, many, many years ago, my dad, he had a phrase. I don't know if he coined the phrase himself or if he got it out of something he read or someone else, but the phrase was, always put people over property. And at Church Hill Mortgage, we changed one word in that. We say here, put people over profits. And clearly we don't mean that to the total exclusion of profits, or we wouldn't be in business today. But what we do mean by that is we won't have profits of any consequence if we don't first have really, really good, talented, skilled people. And so we believe that our single most valuable asset in our company are our people. We strive to employ the right kind of people. And then once we employ them, we do our best to really treat them very, very well in many, many ways. We want our employees to know how much we value them and how much we depend on them. And we simply believe if we treat our employees well, then they'll treat our customers well, and then our customers will treat us well. So it's a circle, and it all starts with treating people well.
Now, we're coming close to the end of our discussion, and I wanted to give you an opportunity to give the listeners some of the lessons that you've learned. And the title of your book, you talk about you learned what is true wealth. What do you mean by what is true wealth?
Well, early in my career, I was blessed to make, in terms of just money, I made far more money in those early years than I ever dreamt I would. And quite frankly, money became almost like a god to me. And I don't mean that to the fullest extent, but I put too much premium on money, and I did not handle my money well. It became more about what money could do for me than how I could use money to bless and help and do good things for other people. And so through the years, I've grown to learn that money is a tool that I can use to really help other people. At the end of the day, there's a biblical adage, a scripture actually, and the scripture says it's more blessed to give than to receive. And so throughout the 66, almost 67 years of my life now, I've grown to see the wisdom in giving of my time, giving of my, whatever wisdom I've acquired over the years by serving as a good mentor to other younger people, giving of my resources to help other people that truly need help. And so I guess more than anything in life, I've just learned that the more I give, the more I receive. And I don't mean the more money I give, the more money I receive. I mean the more I give to help lift other people up from various walks of life, various cultures, various socioeconomic background, the more my heart is open to helping other people, the more I receive in terms of just the blessing of knowing that I have truly helped somebody. And so hopefully that answered your question, Carol.
Well, after watching you for many years, I know that that's how you live your life. In your book, Keep Chopping Wood, you talk about the business of life. You want to say just a little bit about that?
Well, again, it kind of goes in hand in glove of what I just covered. I believe that the business of life, however many years God gives us here on this earth, he's given my dad 86 years of living, and dad may have another 10 or 20 or 30, only God knows. But I've watched my father, I watched my mother. You knew them well, as we've already said. They spent their life giving to others. And they taught me that the real business of life is not to just get up every day, go make money, and come home and watch TV, and then do the next day the very same way, just existing. But life is about more than just existing. And life becomes more abundant as we invest ourselves into good people, good causes. And so when I refer to the business of life, what that means to me is, am I helping other people? If I'm helping other people, truly helping them, that's business of life for me. And if I'm only doing things for me, for my little family, then life becomes pretty meaningless over time.
And Mike, I'd like to give you a few seconds to tell the listeners how they can get in contact with you, as well as purchase your book, Keep Chopping Wood.
Sure, thank you. Well, you can easily reach me by just calling Churchill Mortgage. You can Google that and get the 800 number, so I won't try to give it right now. But we are in large number of states around the country. You can reach me at mike.hardwick@churchillmortgage.com. Again, mike.hardwick@churchillmortgage.com.
Thank you so much, Mike.
Thank you.
My guest, as you can hear, it has been Mike Hardwick. And from Mike, we get an example of someone who has been able to learn a lot about the business of living. And I don't know what your situation is out there. If you're a business entrepreneur or just someone trying to make something different happen in your life. But I think that you can be encouraged by Mike's message. And until next time, I want you to remember that we the people can be the people who change America and our world.